pressure at Ohio State, pressure in the Red River game, a Super League proposal, and the vanilla vigilante is back.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Listen, I can't believe you questioned whether I would be factually correct on this podcast.
Russ Dellinger.
It's sports is supposed to be fun.
And SI's Pat Forty.
They're the grease-based Silicon Valley of America.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and this is the week that Ohio State enters the chat. Buckeyes have got the roster. The Buckeyes have looked brilliant. The Buckeyes were already good, and then they added transfers and Quinshon Judkins, and then they get Jeremiah Smith, and they add the defense. They got everything. But they ain't played anybody other than Iowa. And now we get to see as they travel to Oregon, to Eugene. Huge game, exciting game for the Ducks to get. And we're going to find out a little bit about the Buckeyes. Are they as good as they look? But I want to put it on this. And tell me if I'm wrong, because I don't know. And Pat, you were at the Ohio State game last week. I watch interviews with Ryan Day. And Ryan Day's always been a very serious guy, I think. He's a serious, like, this is not, you know, gregarious public interview guy. But, so he's been a serious coach. But he looks tense. Like, this guy has done everything but win it, and he's lost. He's had seasons go under and, like, a single play. A field goal sailing this way, like the smallest of margins that you could have that would put a guy who's unbelievably successful, an incredible recruiter, and a tremendous coach to somehow be, have not completely won over his fan base. And it's like, I see this guy who's just tense. Like, everything's just like, we got to do more. And some of this is just like the bounce of the ball. Pat, is Ryan Day more nervous or tense or just serious than ever? Or am I just seeing something that isn't really there and he was always this way, or he's not like that once they to turn off these cameras? The way he answers questions is like they're going to about to plan the invasion of Normandy. Like, everything, I got men's lives in my hands here. Not like we have to execute on every single play here to beat Iowa.
Yeah. I sat down with him for about 45 minutes in the summer, and he was pretty serious then too. I think you're correct that's just kind of who he is. It's not like sitting down with Sonny Dykes, okay? You know, where you're just going to crack jokes at each other for 10 minutes before you even start talking ball. So I think that is his natural disposition. After the Iowa game seemed like a continuation of that. And if I had to guess, I'd say, yeah, he's probably more tense and more nervous than he's ever been. I can't say that he necessarily radiated that or projected the tension, but he knows. I mean, he's not dumb, and he doesn't sidestep the magnitude of the Michigan losses. You know, he doesn't try to pretend, you know, that didn't. He knows. He knows very well, and he's not going to try to fool a smart, extremely passionate fan base into thinking, you know, those losses weren't that bad. They were that bad. They were absolutely that bad, and everyone knows it. So he's not even pretending about that. And I think the reaction of the program, the fans, the collective, and Day after last season illustrated that this is 100% all in. We must win it all. We absolutely have to beat Michigan. That's beyond question. But we have to also win the national championship. And so when you set the stakes that incredibly high, holy moly, there's a lot of tension that goes with that. And so it's 7-0 against Iowa at halftime, and that probably felt extremely uncomfortable, even though they were obviously the better team. And then they showed it completely in the second half, and that was that's who they are. And I do think there's another gear that they can hit as long as they just kind of free themselves and play. And at one point, he actually did say, you know, I want the players, I want us to have fun while we're doing this. It's like, okay, but can you? You know, it sounds, it's the right thing to say. Can you do it? I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, they're a very good team who've done everything they've needed to do, but you're right. Now it gets real.
He was like that, I thought, at Big Ten Media Day in July in Indianapolis. Ryan Day was in that kind of mode where you could tell, you know, there was he was not as relaxed as maybe some of the other coaches there, like Brett Bielema, who's just, you know, walking around like typical Brett Bielema. But Ryan was. You could tell that there was a little bit of, I think there's just a lot of pressure. I think that's a pretty good pressure cooker right now there. You have a new president, a new athletic director in around probably $18 to $20 million being spent on your football roster. At least that's what the athletic director said, you know? So it's, there's a lot of pressure there, and you've lost three times to Michigan and you haven't won a championship yet. So all these things pile on top, and it does feel like it feels like national title or bust. And it probably shouldn't feel like that, because a lot of this is at the hands of 18, 19, and 20 year olds. And we've all seen what happens in college sports. We saw it this past weekend. But that's just the reality of it there. And as we all know, because we've spent time up there and covered games up there, Pat, most recently, like, that place is treated like a pro team. I mean, it's Columbus's professional team. That's how it's viewed. And so a lot of pressure on Ryan, maybe more pressure than any coach this year right now, outside of those who are on the realistic hot seat. Ryan feels like he's not necessarily going to get, like, fired, but if he doesn't win the national championship. But, you know, the pressure's in a way there that, I mean, how long do you take it, right? Like, how long can you withstand that heat there without a championship?
So, like, I don't want this discussion to seem like we're picking on Ryan Day, because we're not, right? I kind of feel for him. They do treat it like a professional team. Mm. Guess what? Pro teams lose. Mm. And the coach just laughs.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that went bad. Playoffs, right? You know, we're on to Cincinnati. Like, he's 61-8. Okay.
Yeah.
He's 41-3 in Big Ten play. The only team to beat them is Michigan. You look at his recruiting. Like, he goes and gets Jeremiah Smith and lands them. And yeah, they got a collective. And yeah, so don't the other schools trying to get the number one recruit in the country. Like, he is a phenomenal football coach. They play an exciting style. The idea that you could be under the gun with this record is completely unreasonable, yet kind of reasonable because it's college football. But I mean, at closed doors, he's got to be like laughing, like, you know, screw this. What are we doing here? You try to do better. Like, these Michigan teams were really good. All of that. It's like, it doesn't, it's like, I think it's like, I just see these interviews. It looks like if he cracks a smile and is like, hey, we're having a good time. Like, the fan, he's nervous. The fan, like, it has to be so serious. It's just I don't know. It's just something I'm watching. Like you said, media day, like, even Nick Saban's up there cracking jokes. Right. Like, what coach was so, like, even the most serious coach would be like having a pretty good time in the middle of July. And I think it's like, if he shows that he's enjoying it or things are good, it's like, I'm not taking these losses to Michigan with the deathly seriousness that I have to have. Like, this is, you're not doing better than this. I know Urban won, you know, 7 in a row against Michigan, but those Michigan there were two close ones. The ball bounces Ohio State's way. Sometimes it's going to bounce the other way. He's doing everything you could possibly want. This team looks fantastic, and I just wonder if this poor. We're not going to feel too bad for Ryan Day.
Yeah,
as he returns to his mansion,
$11 million a year.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't feel
but it just
bad.
Is like, yeah. My gosh, this guy, it just looks so tense. I kind of just like, oh man, smile. Smile. It's all right.
That you know, sports is supposed to be fun. It's,
yeah. Like I saw he was doing an interview with Joel Klatt, and I think they asked something about like, what's the best part of being at Ohio State? And I actually can't remember his answer, but most of the time when you ask a coach, what's the best part of being college football coach, they talk about like, you know, like, oh my God, the guys, you know, the kids on the team are so funny. Like, I love hanging out with this. I love recruiting, meeting lots of people, all this stuff. And I think it's just more like, it was just, I can't remember the answer now, but it was this very serious answer. And I was just like, oh my Lord. Whew. Exhale. Well, so he goes into this game. This is not going to ruin the season. Whatever happens on Saturday night is not going to ruin the season. But I feel like if Oregon wins this game, it's going to be like, burn down the city. Oh my God. See? And it's like, holy cow. That's a hard way to operate.
Very hard way to operate. You know, to try to feel like you have to be perfect is, especially in the new era, in an 18-team league with some good additions and some harder travel, and you don't have to. You don't have to win every game now. You don't. So going to Oregon, this should be a really fun measuring stick for both schools. The winner takes a huge step towards punching their ticket to go into the playoff, right? The loser, you're not out of it. You've now, you know, you've narrowed your window maybe, and you've got to play well the rest of the way, but you're not out of it. So the thing is that Ohio State, yes, and that radiates from inside out and from outside in, I think, the seriousness and the urgency with this season. We've been there a lot. That's the stadium I've always thought walking in, where there's not quite menace in the air, but it's like, we are coming in here to win this game or else. And even at Alabama, I'm not sure I felt that. And even in LSU, you know, there seemed to be a little bit more levity that goes with it. At Ohio State, boy, you're walking in there and it is, we are here to win or everything is misery. And I think that comes from the fan base, and it probably comes from the coach right now too.
It's like a different level of drunk that goes in. Like, LSU, they're having a good time. They're having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
They're going to win, right? Saturday night, Tigers.
Sometimes they don't know if they've won the game or not.
They're having fun. You know? Alabama's got like, you know, they're playing, they expect to win, and they usually do. They almost can't fathom losing. And then they have like their Dixieland Delight song. Everyone gets excited. It's all fun. Ohio State's just like, it's just like the gray. You know why I love that? It's my favorite stadium. It looks like this something they built in a war for some reason. I don't know what. They got snipers on the roof. There's like bodies buried in those towers. I don't know what's happening. But remember, they come in like, yes, we're going to kill you. We're just going to beat the hell out of you. Penn State, how dare you show up here? It's like a different level. And like, they're like little hype songs. Like, we dot the I. Like, is that still exciting?
You know, only on like senior day.
Cool tradition.
Right? The end of the season. Yeah.
Like after like 60 years or however long they've been doing it, you're like, wow, they figured out how to do a cursive Ohio. It's amazing. Probably was super amazing back in the day. Now maybe less exciting. Hang on, Sloopy.
That is their one kind of lighthearted thing.
Yeah, but even that's kind of like, this is this hokey ass old song, right? Like, I love Hang on, Sloopy. Great tradition. We're going to eventually do this thing about stealing songs, and I have that on my list of a song that cannot be stolen by any other school. Like, it would just be, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it's not like, no, let's all sing Dixieland Delight and talk about, like, you know, drinking beer and you know, little turtle doving all night and then F Auburn. I mean, like, that's like that, you know, it's more fun. It's more festive. And we're doing light shows and stuff. This is like Hang on, Sloopy. That's their moment, right? So it's just, I agree. It's just a different vibe, man. It is like some pressure on Ohio State. Now, the good point is he's got all the ingredients.
Oh, boy.
And they give him all the ingredients. Mm-hmm. So too much given, much is expected. But, woo, because this is a game that shouldn't happen. Oh, they probably should have played someone good in the non-conference. But if this is the old Big Ten, they're sitting there going, all we got to do is beat Penn State. The rest of this league ain't got crap. And yeah, Michigan, lost three times. Man, Ohio State doesn't beat Michigan this year.
Oh boy.
Forget it. Like, come on. This is not a threat. This is only a threat because you're like, it's a rivalry game. Anything can happen. Generally speaking, it does not. I'll tell you what happens. Ohio State kicks the hell out of them. So I would be sitting back being, you know, imagine ball coach. It'd be like, I mean, like, we're only practicing three times a week with this crew. We ain't losing. I got a golf game. I got a tee time at Augusta fall session. Not so. You brought this up. You sent this to us. There was a tweet out there. This is how tense they are at Ohio State. Ohio State is not being disrespected by anybody. Like, everyone's like, they probably should win the national title. This team's loaded. They're awesome. Everything's great. I don't know. Not a lot of like trash talk on Ohio State. How could you? But they're looking for it, right? So this tweet exchange you saw, and I think it involves Joel Klatt. Go ahead and read it and set this up.
Yes, it involves Joel Klatt. Otherwise, I'm not sure it would be worth discussing. But Joel Klatt's a very prominent person in this sport. So go through this. David Hale from ESPN. Pretty funny writer, funny guy. And he was writing a kind of a recap of what happened for ESPN.com over the weekend.
Does it every week. Sunday. Every week he has a...
Yeah, every
there's
week.
There's a lot of inside jokes. So, there's a lot of jokes.
Right,
right.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty... It tries to be definitely, you know, pretty heavy on humor. So under the heading of sluggish day for the top teams, number 3 Ohio State had little trouble swatting away Iowa 35-7. Still, it had to feel like a loss for the Buckeyes, who are the first-ranked team to allow points to Iowa's offense since Michigan surrendered 2 touchdowns and went to the Hawkeyes in Week 5 of 2022. He followed that with a long paragraph lauding Georgia for beating Auburn and said that, that they performed pretty well. So, Jeremy Birmingham, part of a podcast and Rivals covering Ohio State, said this is ESEC spin is next level propaganda. And then Joel Klatt took it to the next level by himself by tweeting, they don't even hide it when you see it and call it out, and then you're an SEC hater. Okay, cool story. This is the example, you know, of like, not even really knowing who you're talking about, but just describing conspiracy. We love conspiracy so much that you just go straight to the conspiracy without really actually thinking about what you're saying conspired here. David Hale carries no water for the SEC. None. He spent most of his career at ESPN covering the ACC. Does a very good job of it. I've never read anything and said, oh boy, David Hale's in the bag for the SEC. And now all of a sudden we're saying that because he was making kind of a joke about Iowa being terrible and you give up 7 points to Iowa, it's a loss. That I took as the joke here. But oh my God, no, we can have no jokes in Buckeye land right now. And then for Joel Klatt to come in on top of that, broadcaster for Fox, broadcasts the Big Ten, doesn't broadcast the SEC. I would say understand who you're talking about would be my point there. You can you want to claim conspiracy, go ahead, but have a little bit more idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, David, I love reading anything from David Hale because he infuses into stories humor, which is so hard to do, and he does it quite often, and this is another good example of it. It's obviously going over the heads of some. He's just too good at it, that David Hale. It's ridiculous. But it's also hilarious to see just play out these things. And it speaks to what this whole conversation has been about, what Dan brought up, is how tense people are in Columbus about the Buckeyes.
Yeah, have fun. This is like, it doesn't really get better than this. Like, you're killing
it.
It's an exciting team. Just to point out this the column, and this is the problem with like aggregation or clips that go on. Like, David Hale's entire, the column he writes for Sunday Morning is like 5,000 words long. And everybody gets a joke. So, like, everybody gets teased. That's the whole point of the column. It's kind of fun. And even in the Georgia part, he said Georgia wore Auburn down rather than delivering any statement. Like, this is hardly like this big, like, Georgia's better than Ohio State. If anything, it was a bit embarrassing not to get a single Peyton Thorne interception. Typically, Auburn is giving those away with the purchase of any large soft drink, right? But yeah, it's tense. And then it's like, all of a sudden, even the Fox guys are in on it. Like, don't dare say one. If you're laughing that you gave up one touchdown to Iowa and you're making fun of Iowa, it is not an insult on the badge of honor of the program. Like, Buckeyes, Buckeye fans, even Ryan, maybe you can't do it publicly. I hope you're doing it privately. Like, pour yourself a little Cabernet one time. Have a sip. Relax. Like, these are the glory days. Your team is unbelievable. Go win. Take it serious. Yeah. But, like, woo, baby. Like, it just feels that way from the outside. I hope they're having a blast inside. I assume the players are. But it's okay. It's okay to be good. It's okay to know it. Yeah. And you should be, not only are you great, but Michigan isn't.
Yeah, right? You should be enjoying the hell out of the first half of this season. You kidding me?
Michigan's bad. We're good. This is dream come true. Let's go. You got this, Ohio. All right, we'll be right back. We'll talk Red River. All right, Oklahoma, Texas. Game is in Dallas, as always. Texas State Fair. We will play Texas State Fair. Would you eat it later in the week? Traditional segment for this podcast. See what they got.
Oh, yeah.
See what they got friolating at the Texas State Fair. It's always interesting. Very creative people. Very creative people.
That's a good word to describe.
You're like, creative. Oh, I didn't know you could deep fry butter.
They're so innovative over there.
They're innovative in weird ways.
It's a state fair.
Yeah. And it's like, I swear they're sponsored by the cardiologist lobby. Like, to get more. What if we could get them to eat deep fried butter?
Yeah, they're the grease-based Silicon Valley of America. Yeah. You know, technology, cutting-edge innovation. It's
better than the Oklahoma State Fair where they had that stupid sit in a center for 10 days and a guy brings a cup of excrement from a porta potty to try to smoke the other guy out, and it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
So you want to hear that? That's a few pods ago. Texas State, we'll see. I think Texas is going to beat Oklahoma, but the Texas State Fair, absolutely better than the Oklahoma State Fair. Texas, also, looks like a wagon, looks like a team. They got everything. Hell, they're winning with their backup QB, some guy from New Orleans they got. Just a backup recruit to the mighty Quinn Ewers, Dr. Pepper fame. The Arch guy. Anyway, they're rolling, but they have a big victory at Michigan. Then again, what exactly is that? Is all that impressive or not all that impressive? So they still got something to go here. What are you expecting out of this this game Saturday? Pat, we'll start with you.
I think it's going to be a typical Red River game where it's going to probably be closer and weirder than we expect going in. Spread is big, 14.5. Their last 9 regular season games, only one has been decided by more than one score. That was that 49-0 wipeout 2 years ago when Oklahoma basically didn't have a quarterback. We'll see whether Michael Hawkins Jr. is a good quarterback. He's basically seen meaningful action in 2 games, so big step up for him here. Texas certainly looks better, has played better, but this is one where I would factor the rivalry in heavily in terms of expecting this to be contentious, competitive, and God knows what's going to happen because there's a lot of crazy stuff that often goes with this game. I'm looking forward to it, as always.
We're always looking to kind of anoint somebody as the most dominant at various points of the season, you know, 6 weeks in. I think a lot of people would say that team's been Texas. Not a super tough schedule. Obviously, their biggest win is at Michigan, a team that now has two losses. But I think Texas and Ohio State are the ones that kind of come to mind as the programs that have been probably the most dominant. And we'll be able to see, probably their biggest test yet. As Pat said, this game seems like it's always tight. It's shocking to me that the spread is what it is. Feels like one of those, does Vegas know something we don't? Because this game is often really, really tight, and there are plenty of upsets, it seems like, in this one that unfold. Quinn Ewers was supposed to be back for Texas. That'll be huge. It sounds like he could have played last week if they had a game. You know, they had a bye week. So sounds like he's going to be pretty healthy, and that'll be a big, big deal, big return for the Longhorns.
Ross, how big is this for Brent Venables? I feel like this game is going to turn on whether Michael Hawkins can complete a pass. Can they hold off the pass rush? He's obviously an excellent runner. First true freshman from OU to ever start the Red River game. Kind of wild. I mean, the game's 120 years old. I guess for a lot of those freshmen were ineligible, but still. You come in the SEC, they lose at home their opener to Tennessee. Like, this is not a great Oklahoma team. They made the big comeback to beat Auburn, but how much pressure is there, or how much here I am putting pressure on guys after trying to tell people to relax. Of course, if you're 5-6-0, relax. I'm just a hypocrite. It's okay.
That's right. We see you. We see you, Dan.
What do you think, Ross?
Well,
bail me out. It's maybe a bad not question. Any, I get.
I don't know. I don't think he has any pressure at all. We all remember back in June, I think we talked about it on the pod when his contract was extended and he got a new 6-year deal, Dan. Total value of $52 million, average of $8.5 million a year with probably a big whopper of a buyout. So, the money's hard to find.
Well, I don't think the guy was going to hit Skid Row one way or the other. He's already but. Yes, he's clipping coupons.
Yeah, no, I see what you say. You know, for absolutely. Even though they won 10 games last year, and that was a big season after the 6-7 first year, all these jobs, a lot of these jobs are contingent, not really on winning and how consistently you can hit the 10-win mark. It's can you win championships and can you beat your rival? And usually you have to beat your rival to win championships. That's what we've seen over the years. The Alabama-Auburn situation is similar. The Alabama-Tennessee situation, similar. Ohio State-Michigan situation. We just talked about Ryan Day and your rival. These rivalry games are important for recruiting and just for the standing of the university and you're standing there. So, yeah, I mean, this is a pretty big pressure pack moment. However, you would think that fans needed to need to kind of understand the situation a little bit, right? Brent Venables is a year behind, of Steve Sarkisian. He's in his fourth year. Brent's in his third year. And Sark has just built Texas up roster-wise to something that OU probably isn't right yet. But maybe, shockingly, I know, but it takes time sometimes to build things. And you hope that everybody kind of understands that. But there's not a lot of understanding in college football.
Yeah, they don't understand. They don't want to understand that. The only good news right now, if Oklahoma loses this game, is that Lincoln Riley's probably in worse shape than Venables is, and they do care about that at Oklahoma. There's definitely pressure. I think this first year in the SEC, you lost your big SEC opener to Tennessee. You came out of that thinking, well, Tennessee might be great. Oh, wait, but Tennessee just lost to Arkansas. Maybe Tennessee's not great. What does that say about us? Maybe we're not great either. Oh, no. And Texas may be getting away from us. Texas is a little more ready for the SEC than we are. Our remaining schedule is brutal. Got Mississippi on the road, Missouri on the road, LSU on the road, Alabama at home. There's, I think, some urgency to show up and be ready and play well in this game for Venables and for his freshman quarterback. You threw me off with that freshman quarterback thing, Dan. I was like, no way, what about Jamel Holloway? But Holloway took over when Troy Aikman broke his leg in 1985 in the fourth game of the year. And this is how different things were then. That season started September 28th. That was Oklahoma's first game. It was their fourth game, was against Miami October 19th, which was the game after Red River. So Aikman was the starting quarterback for the first four. Holloway took over as true freshman, led him to the national title.
They waited till late September to start the season?
September 28th was their season opener.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't believe that. That's not the way I remember things, but sure enough.
So, listen, I can't believe you questioned whether I would be factually correct on this podcast. Ever? Next thing you're going to say I mispronounced the words. Insulted. Professional.
I'm here
podcaster
to fact check
here, Pat.
Big job.
I saw that note. Every time, if I see a good note, I put it out there to make it seem like I know what I'm doing.
It's a good note. Made me look it up.
There you go. I don't know. This season can go sideways, and Oklahoma could be getting better, and this season can go sideways. I mean, there's five losses staring at them in a South Carolina game. I mean, you could be pretty good and lose to Texas, at Mississippi, at Missouri, Alabama, and at LSU. You could still be a pretty good team. But, you know, the thing about Oklahoma is they're always good. They always have a lot of wins. We're going to talk about this in a minute with this, like, these Super League concepts. How do the fans react when you're 6-6 or 7-5? And you're still pretty good.
Sure ain't used to that at Oklahoma.
Right. So that's the problem with adding, you know, they used to be able to say, all right, we lost to Texas, but we got a little Big 12 roadkill here to take down, and we're still going to end up with 9-10, even in a bad year. That isn't the case with that schedule. They get them no favors with this schedule. It's exciting, but it's fraught with problems. Now, they can also, I'm not just writing off all five games. They can win some of them, but it's certainly no cakewalk to go. I mean, even South Carolina, who knows what you're getting, but, the bye week is gone. And I mean, the Black Bears show up on November 2. I mean, that's it's not a hockey game. So I think OU will be all right there.
We'll talk Bears later too.
Some Bears too. Yeah, we do have a fat bear. Let's get to this. These Super League things have popped out. There was one report of one Super League, and then Ross has one that I think is the more credible possibility out on Yahoo today. Ross, explain the concept of what they're trying to do here, what they're proposing. It's a couple of Disney execs, former Disney execs.
It's interesting. It started about 3 or 4 months ago of this group of investors and former Disney executives. They lead a private equity capital venture firm called Smash Capital, and based in LA and New York. And they've created a plan, not completely different from the plan we saw announced last week, the one that we've known about for, you know, quite some time, led by Lynn Perna. It's just the basis for most of these plans, right, is number one, splitting off football and optimizing sort of more monetizing college athletics to generate more revenue, which usually means pitting the big brands together, expanding playoffs, you know, all that stuff. So this one is probably gaining within the administrative world a little more traction than the others. You know, some ADs have told me, I quoted them in the story, that this one makes the most sense than the others. And it's gaining enough traction to where, Dan, I don't know that it immediately happens. I don't know that it happens in 3 years, right? I don't know that it ever happens, although some feel that it's inevitable. The concepts within the plan, which is deemed Project Rudy, by the way, the concepts within the plan, I think, could trigger changes within conferences, specifically the Big Ten and SEC, which happened to meet this week in Nashville. And I think that I think the money in the plan and the concepts could really change things, trigger change within the conferences. And that includes eventually unequal distribution of wealth, which we've seen already happen at the college football playoff level. And we've already seen happen in the ACC. And I think that's a possibility down the road. I think even before that, scheduling arrangements like we talked about that's going to be discussed at the meeting this week between the Big Ten and SEC to generate more revenue is possible. So this plan definitely, and the money involved in the plan, puts pressure on changes happening. And I think that's, I hope people get more so out of the story than just, hey, here's this like Super League proposal sort of thing.
So the proposal is the four major conferences remain, and basically there's a 70 teams that are deemed major college football. Mm-hmm. And those 70 teams will only play each other. There will be no scheduling games against group of five teams,
right,
FCS teams, anybody right else. And these 70 teams will play each other. They'll play for an expanded playoff. You will have more big name versus big name. And there'll be a private capital investment into college football of as much as $9 billion, right? That's the basic plan that would impact. So if you ain't in those four leagues, you're done. But if you like playing anybody outside of those four leagues, you ain't doing it anymore.
Right, right. And that's where the money comes from, right? The increase in revenue. And it's really broken down into two main ideas, right? It's to increase revenue is one, the scheduling arrangement, as you mentioned, no more playing group of five FCS, no more playing where you have kind of a conference schedule like we see now. It's probably more pitting blue bloods in the top tiers together, right? And then adding, of course, playoff games where you have more games. And the second part of increasing revenue is consolidating a media deal, right? And you'd have to wait, right, for the current media contracts to come up, and then you would consolidate a media deal that would be worth more when you group just a 70 of them together. And that's where the extra money is coming from. Now, another part of this is tiered distribution, right, which is this plan lays out three tiers, tier one, two, and three, and 16 schools in tier one, 22 in tier two, and 32 in tier three. And the tiers are based on performance, and they are split based on revenue line, you know, revenue generating line. So if you're in tier one, you get more money than tier two. If you're in tier two, you get more money in tier three. And there's a regular relegation promotion where schools can move up and down depending on, again, their performance. But a lot of the models and the specifics of the models are kind of left up to administrators to decide. The main gist is optimizing schedules and consolidating media rights. And again, this proposal has gained enough attention, I think, that it has been discussed at the highest levels, and conference commissioners discussed it 2 weeks ago when they met in Chicago. I think NCAA President Charlie Baker has been briefed on the model. Again, is it going to happen immediately? Probably not. Many ADs say it one day probably will happen down the line, but concepts of the plan will almost certainly be implemented in college sports fairly immediately, if I had to guess.
Pat, I don't know about you, but nothing stirs my soul like dreaming of consolidating and maximizing media rights. Like that, as a sports fan, that really, really gets the juices flowing. Your thoughts on this super
you go,
smash capital?
When you go sit at a bar stool at a sports bar, you know, and there's games on all the TVs, that's what everybody's talking about. Hey, what's your media package over there in the ACC? How much you guys getting? Well, it's not as much as what we're getting in the SEC, you know. And we've got this tier two distribution that's really good for us. So go SEC. No, I mean, I It's important, obviously. It drives all the decisions, but the people don't care. The people want their sport, and they, I think most of them would prefer their sport to not be completely bastardized in pursuit of additional revenue. I get it. You throw $9 billion in front of people. You got their attention, no doubt about it. The unequal revenue distribution, to me, seems like an inevitability. Once the ACC cracked on that, I mean, you guarantee Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State's like, yeah, when are we going to do that? We're tired of Purdue, Illinois, Rutgers, and Maryland getting the same amount we are. The SEC, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Texas, hey, why does Mississippi State get what we get? That part, to me, seems like a dynamic that's inevitable, however that pie gets split up. My question, Ross, just so Jack Swarbrick is involved in this, which conference is Jack putting Notre Dame in?
Yeah, we failed to bring that up. That was one of the biggest things that's happened within probably the last month, I think, is Jack Swarbrick has joined kind of the team of these investors. And everybody remembers, if you're a longtime pod listener, a couple years ago or a year and a half ago, maybe we had Jack on the pod, one of the rare guests, to talk about NIL and the future of college athletics.
He was talking about amateurism back then. Now that he's in on the $9 billion, smash that, baby. Flip-flop Jack. Oh, boy.
The op-ed for the New York Times about we've got to preserve the sanctity of education.
That's all gone. Yeah, got a new boss.
I think Jack's role is eye-popping for people. He just retired from Notre Dame. He had just gotten off the College Football Playoff Committee as one of the, you know, top decision makers in the sport. And now he's proposing a model that, alters completely the sport. And probably, as written in that story, his good friend Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the SEC and Big Ten, aren't really on board with these models and these concepts. Greg Sankey has made it, I think, fairly clear publicly the last couple months, really, that he is not a fan of a lot of these models and concepts that come in and kind of overhaul things, and certainly not a fan of private equity money. And this one has both of them. And as somebody said in the story, if you don't have the Big Ten and SEC on board with this fully, then you probably don't have a plan. However, as mentioned, I know it's like the third time me saying it, but the Big Ten and SEC will almost certainly grab concepts of this plan.
So they'll go tier,
and use tier, them to generate money, whether that's revenue distribution differently or generating revenue by different matchups and more matchups, all that stuff. We're going to see that.
I would say this about the Smash Capital plan. What is it? Project Rudy? It sucks. Yep. I get why a private equity company would want to do this. These super leagues are the worst ideas, the dumbest ideas. They're totally ridiculous. You've completely lost the plot of what college football is. It will backfire tremendously on the vast majority of anyone who would go along with this. The idea of they're trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist, that they don't have enough money. They've got enough money. They have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. What, it's not working for the Big Ten and the SEC? It's working great. The whole concept, and this is the thing, I point this out about the perceptions and the conventional wisdom in college football, it's always wrong. They're always wrong, and they always are crying about something that doesn't materialize. What were we told when NIL would come in? Alabama would get every single player, and they'd never lose a game. And then we just watched Vanderbilt whip them with a transfer quarterback on an NIL deal and three brand-new starting linemen, and they mauled them. Parity is here. It's the exact opposite of what they predict. The playoff will ruin the regular season. The 4-team playoff did not ruin the regular season. The sport got even more popular. The 12-team playoff, no, it didn't. If we had a 4-team playoff, they said, all the bowl games will die. We have more bowl games now than we ever did. They said that if kids could be in a commercial, it would ruin the relationship between the fan and the player, and college athletics would lose 20% or more of its fan base overnight because they'd be disgusted at the idea that Caitlin Clark has a Gatorade commercial. In fact, the opposite happened. They're always wrong. They're always running around claiming they've got a problem when there ain't any problem. This would be the worst thing to do. Jack Swarbrick, honestly, it should be embarrassed that he's even part of this thing. This is just ridiculous. You're trying to create the private equity people and the TV guys might be like, hey, let's get them NFL light. 70 teams are playing each other. We'll have more good games. If you're trying to sell tickets, if you're trying to generate excitement on your campus, if you're trying to use big-time college football to recruit applications and students, if you're trying to make it the front porch of your university, the last thing you want to do is become the NFL. Fans hate their NFL team. We just talked about how would Oklahoma handle if they go 7-5. If you're 7-5 in the NFL, things are going pretty good.
Yeah.
These fans are
make a playoff.
You're not getting 100,000 in your stadium if you're 6-5 and you're playing to save your tier two media rights. Watch a bad NFL team. The city hates them. There's the games aren't filled. The TV ratings go down. People stop wearing their hats. And the only saving grace is they sit around and go, hey man, we're going to get to draft this guy because we get the number one pick. And we're going to get an easy schedule. And it's even revenue sharing. We don't have to worry about that stuff. They're going to have teams going 1-11, and you don't get the top pick. You get the worst pick. You get less money, and you don't get it. Like, there's no benefit. They're taking the private equity people don't care because they just want the money. But you're taking all of the competitive balance that the NFL has and throwing that part out the window is the only thing that sustains it. If you are in the Big Ten or the SEC and you are not named Ohio State, Alabama, Texas, Georgia, and that might be it. I don't even know if Michigan wants a part of this. You should be like, hell no. Unless you're an AD saying, boy, we get all this money, my salary will triple. Yeah, who's getting right. All this money? A public university that has $1 billion endowment? Oh, boy, let's cheer that. I can't wait. My university will make $100 million more dollars that no one will see, and we get to go 3-9. This is a stupid idea. They've lost the complete plot, anyone going for this. You will regret this I don't think it's going to happen because there are people like Greg Sankey who are smart enough to go, are you crazy? Imagine being Mississippi State with this plan.
No.
You want me? This would be horrible. You got to play some teams in the group of five so you get some more wins and you have a nice fall day. Hey, it's parents' weekend. Show up. We win the game. Everyone has a picnic. Everyone feels good. We got a fight and chance. This would be a disaster. You would never get out of the basement.
I hate to even step in after that flamethrower. You just napalmed the entire
it's
thing.
It's stupid.
Capital.
They're trying to con you into getting, yes, would I like to, I'm going to invest in that private equity company. I'll tell you that. Would I like to have a piece of college football, right? Buy stock in Clemson? Hell yeah, I'd like to buy stock. Americans love football. You will get people watching the games, but it is a disaster for all the teams, except for a few.
Yeah, the issue with this plan and the other Super League plan is you're trying to overlay an NFL template on a college sport. And yeah, there's a lot of economic realities that dovetail. But as you very forcefully laid out, Dan, it's a completely different dynamic in terms of the experience, what the colleges want out of it, what the fans want out of it, versus what you get from a pro model. I'll tell you this, if you're going to do this, if you're going to go to a 70 team, we're not playing G5, we're not playing FCS, your home games are going to go down. You're going to go from 8-6 or 7-6 or maybe even 5. And guess what then? Parents weekend, go ahead and tell the university president, you know what? We're going to have fewer visitors to campus. We're not going to have that. You're not going to sell enough tickets, but you're getting fewer people to look at your campus and think about going to your school. Okay. And then when they do show up, yes, you're seeing your team get its teeth kicked in, because a lot of people can sit around and say, you know what? Yeah, beating Chattanooga isn't that exciting to me. But guess what? The people with the season tickets show up with their RV just the same, and they buy the concessions, and they tailgate, and they have a great time, and they actually enjoy seeing your team score 50 against somebody else and winning by 40 points. And you don't get that if you're going to see your team show up and go 2-8 or 2-10.
I think we've ruled on this. I think we've said enough. Yep. We'll be back with Fat Bear Week update. It's a doozy in the championship. All right, before we get to Fat Bear Weekend, we have a People's Court. A People's Court update, kind of. But, you know, last week, you know, we're always looking for, you know, we do Race for the Case. We're always looking for our locks of the week, or it's a big upset. And I think really what we need to be doing is scanning the internet for bad fan songs, bad fan hype songs. And I'm not even talking about
they're out there.
Not talking about like the Ames one, like Hooray Ames. Like that's actually sort of, that was like a professional band, which is kind of even more embarrassing. I'm talking about like just some dude with a guitar hyping on YouTube. And if we had found this a week ago, we would have known Arkansas was going to win, not just cover, but flat out win, and you could have bet the Hogs money line. Because if you listen to this hype song here by Arkansas fan Matt Besser, Matt, this is where we're exposed. His YouTube currently, this video has 83 views right now, so we're going to make it a little bigger. I have sources sent me this. A source sent me this. Play this song.
Deep Hog.
This song is so good or so bad, whatever, however you want to categorize it. We should have known. If you heard it, you would know Arkansas was going to win the game. Play the song, Joe.
Got me to write this song using those words. Primetime matchup on the hill. Top five team coming into our house. Sold out Razorback Stadium. 76,000 fans ready to wreak havoc. We've seen this before. This is why we work. This is why we play. A chance to make history. Who we are. One state, one team for Arkansas.
Whoop pig.
Yeah, whoop pig.
Oh, God.
Whoop pig.
I like the purposeful let's not rhyme.
No,
the first few, lines. Then he did it at the end. He started to rhyme.
He was
Eminem
by the end, but at the beginning.
Yeah, I know.
He assiduously avoided easy rhymes early on, you know? That happened on the top of the hill. Top five team coming to Fayetteville. No. Coming to our house or what. It's like, okay, great. And then he forced the rhyme in there, something with history. Oh boy.
This is what I love about college football.
But it just means more.
This is a dude saying, I'm going to write a song about this big game that we're probably going to lose. But he had faith.
He did.
And then he puts it up on YouTube for the world to see, and we find it.
I'm concerned about your sourcing that you came up with this.
Listener source. Our listeners, they find stuff and they know. They know what excites me.
Oh, they do.
They know what excites me.
They do.
Fat Bear Week that final. The finale is here. And we have a rematch of last year's championship game. Chunk is taking on Grazer. Last year, Grazer won it. And this time he's got to beat Chunk again. I think I compared Chunk to Gonzaga last week. As
always in contention,
kind of a, you know, you do, fan favorite. If your team is out, you know, Mark Few seems like a good dude. Maybe they should win one. I think everyone's kind of rooting for Chunk, but Grazer won 2-1 of the vote last year. So, we'll see what goes down. Who do you have, Pat? Do you have Grazer?
I have Grazer. I am sitting in the catbird seat, baby. And so I am ready to relinquish, actually amend my rule that
the Fat Bear winner
doesn't count towards race. It does. It does.
No, it doesn't.
We're putting it back in. But, Dan, is it true we have another fatality, another Fat Bear fatality?
Reports, Fat Bear Week legend Otis, four-time champ. Won it in 2014, 2016, 2017, and 2021, has passed away. Natural causes.
Man. Natural causes. That's good. At least he was not murdered. Not murdered.
Not on camera.
By Patches.
Patches. Okay. Also, I found out why Patches wasn't included. So to be in Fat Bear Week, you have to go to this, hang out at this one stream, both in the spring and then in the fall. So they have the picture of what you looked like in the spring and then in the fall. And if you don't, you're not in. So Patches was not hanging out at the right salmon fishing place.
It's not, this is not murder related. It was not.
That's what the Katmai National Park people are saying, you know? Okay. So, I think, you know, the vote is, has gotten incredibly more popular. I think we should expand the field a little bit. I'm not saying expand just the playoff, but like if a bear is fatter over two rivers over, it's not like that's a group of five river. Should get an automatic
bit. You take group of five river.
The salmon over there is just as important as the salmon at this river.
You and Petiti and Sankey, expand everything. That's what Petiti said earlier this week. Yeah, I'm getting good feedback about expanding the NCAA basketball tournament. Oh, great.
From who?
Good. His coaches, of course.
Yeah. Everybody who's got course. A bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were one of the top 90 teams. Give me my bonus. Come on. I admit the Fat Bear Week has taken a dark turn. We've had a murder and we've had a death of a longtime member.
Pour one out for Otis. He's entertained us. Great champion. Great champion.
Did, yeah.
I thought that lean salmon diet would really help you live forever. But
not quite.
Well, all right. We have an update on a people's court here. We can kind of extend this question because I saw there's some issues here. One of our podcast heroes is a man named Spencer Sheehan, who dubs himself the Vanilla Vigilante.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And he's filed over 400 lawsuits targeting food products.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
Not enough straw. You know, it says it's a strawberry Pop-Tart. There really isn't any strawberry, that type of stuff. Fireball cinnamon whiskey. That was a big one.
Yeah, that was good.
In certain states, it's just malt liquor flavored as cinnamon. He's gone after the big boys, Tostitos, Velveeta, Kellogg. I mean, you know, the Mount Rushmore of food packaging, processed foods in America. Well, he won one recently. He won a battle and got a $9 million settlement. It's a class action suit in the state of New York against the Breyers Ice Cream Company, which he said falsely advertised vanilla on its vanilla ice cream. It actually contains non-vanilla plant flavors. Breyers lost $9 million. It's a class action suit. Anybody can jump in on this. I don't think you're going to get a lot. It seems like a product that sells, right?
Right.
If you bought a vanilla of a Breyers vanilla ice cream in any size between April 21st, 2016 and August 14th, 2024, and you still have proof of purchase, you can get in on this. But it's only 9 years.
Keeping that 8-year-old receipt for your ice cream.
8 years worth of Breyers, but there's only 9 million. So I'm thinking everyone's going to get like a nickel.
Yeah.
But you can jump in on it. So that's the victory. So, you know, we make fun of these, but sometimes they win. The problem is with the vanilla vigilante Spencer Sheehan is he's getting a lot of blowback from big business for filing frivolous lawsuits. I probably could see that coming. And he's been sued three different times, and he's in trouble. A New York federal court has issued a show cause order to Sheehan asking why it should not sanction him for pursuing frivolous lawsuits. This one involves Starbucks after it dismissed allegations about added potassium in coffee. They were based on little more than, quote, a hunch and a vague reference. He didn't really have any. It said the filing was a complaint, quote, without any studies, relevant case law, or reasonable interpretations of the wording on the product label to support the allegations contained within. So big business coming back against the vigilante. Justice 40, should they shut down Spencer Sheehan? Or is this vanilla thing proof that he's doing the good work of the people?
Two things. Yes, A, he won $9 million. All right. For the people.
A lot of ice cream.
And two, he's given us a ton of content. So Spencer Sheehan needs to be protected by the law and given the chance to file every dumb lawsuit he can come up with. Now, could I make one brief point I was thinking while you were talking about this, Dan? Like, if you're the Breyers Ice Cream Company and you're knowingly making vanilla ice cream without vanilla in it, just if you're going to perpetrate a fraud, even if it seems completely minor, shouldn't you just at least contact your general counsel and say, hey, we're lying about our ice cream. How big a problem is this? Can we get nailed? And the general counsel come back and say, hey, just put a dropper of vanilla in every package, every box of ice cream we sell. Can we do that? And then all of a sudden you don't lose $9 million. Use your words.
He should be any hunch that he has, file away, buddy. Just go ahead. File away. That's what I say.
Keeps them on our toes.
Yeah.
I mean, if we don't have him on that wall,
that's right.
You can't believe any of these packaging.
Yeah, we're getting bad Fireball, bogus Pop-Tarts, lying ice, dishonest ice cream. I mean,
if you look at this Breyers thing, this package, I'm looking at it. It says natural vanilla made with fresh cream, sugar, and milk. And it has pictures of like vanilla, like flowers on it. Doesn't say anything about non-plant-based vanilla. Free Spencer. We need that vanilla vigilante out there.
We do. Keep going.
Keep going.
Keep filing those suits.
Yeah, I think he's in trouble. I think Ashley's Furniture is trying. They may have him for 100 G's for claiming something that he. Yeah, he needs to do a little. He needs to be a little bit more. The hunches, I think he just throws them out there and sees what happens. I don't know. Man's got a lot of time on his hand.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. What does he do as a day job?
He just hangs out at the supermarket.
I guess so.
Looking for
rifling
fraud.
Rifling through the freezer and the cabinets.
Checking ingredients aisles. On every
natural vanilla. We'll see about that. All right. That's our show. We'll be back on Thursday with more, including picks for a very exciting weekend of college football ahead. We will talk to you later.